All right. We have a quorum, and today is Thursday, October 12th, and it's 401. Thanks. Yeah, it's 401, and I'd like to bring the Environmental Services Advisory Committee meeting to order. First of all, I'm going to do the roll call quickly. Fred Ariza.
Here.
Mike Harrier.
Yep.
Douglas Jennings. Oh,
here.
Yeah. We had quorum. I don't know why I keep thinking that you're visiting us.
That was so a guess. Nope.
we'll get used to you, Doug. Sorry.
I'll be here.
Okay. Trevor Ledbetter.
Here.
Susanna Shippers. Okay, problems with audio, but you're here. Elvira Suarez Din. Haven't seen her for a couple meetings. Ryan Thomas, absent, and Chris Yarder, present. Let's get started. I did actually have with item two for chairperson's report. Hi, Carlos.
And Ryan is
on. Oh, and Ryan's here now. You know, I just wanted to give you guys a heads up that Mayor and Council have been working on a resolution number 23687, and they're going to be voting on it at their October 17th meeting. And what this has to do with our rules and regs for mayor and council meetings, and then also BCCs. I'm a quick reader. I'll just read a few things quickly. So a quorum may consist of a combination of members who are attending in person and or remotely. The quorum must be maintained at all times. So with they're saying now that the chat function may not be used, and that of course is when the meeting starts. The Commission on Disability Issues may file a request with the city clerk to use the chat function when necessary. Use of the function will require the chairperson or support staff to read the names of the members commenting and all statements made via chat into the record. So they're just trying to make sure that we're following all the protocol. This is when members who attend BCC meetings remotely should keep their cameras on. Members must participate in the roll call, at which time the support staff or chairperson will indicate the members who are attending by telephone, video, or internet conference. The chairperson may also require that all votes be taken by roll call. Members participating remotely may vote on all matters in the same manner as those members physically present, so long as they participated for the discussions and presentations. That really doesn't apply to us since we don't meet in person. All reasonable efforts will be made to ensure that the presentations before the BCC are available to remote attendees. The legal action report and minutes of the meeting should identify the members who participated remotely. So we just recently got a form where every year the clerk's office asks, okay, how are you going to meet? And since the pandemic, we have now have this option to meet online remotely. So they're just trying to catch up with the technology and what we've been doing. Do you have any questions? If you go to the Mayor Council agenda meeting, you know, you can find the resolution document if you want to go through that. Okay. rules and regs. So we'll go to item three. And Carlos.
Good afternoon. Can you guys hear me okay?
What?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I'll turn it up.
So the first item listed is the class update.
Right.
So one of the things we're looking at has been entered in a couple of meetings is really the possibility or the transition of really the class drop-off program, the way we know it today, the way we've been doing that for the past couple of years, and really reincorporated back into the recycling bin, the blue bin. So several things that essentially have changed since we first, or the assumptions that we made going into the program have changed. So one of them was that we were going to get $10 a ton for every ton of glass that was essentially picked up and delivered to Strategic Materials in Phoenix. Over the past 2 to 3 months, we have received checks, but those checks essentially have bounced. And so even though they don't really amount to a whole lot of dollars amount, it just gives us the indication that we're not receiving payment for the glass that essentially is being picked up at Los Reales. So that's one. The second one was when part of that agreement was that we were supposed to get some reasonable clean crushed glass and essentially it was going to be 10% of whatever tonnage we sent to Phoenix. We got pretty much a sample. We essentially rejected that load, but we're not really getting the level of quality that we had expected that we're going to get out of the crushed glass. So those are the two primary factors that are basically are driving our decision really to probably pull and transition back from the glass drop-off program to putting it back on the bin. We still, and if you see on the MRF reports, we still see a lot of the glasses still being placed in there. We are in the process of really looking at what the pricing structure would be if essentially we put the glass back into the program. And we're looking at the cost difference between our cost of really making the collection, the cleanup, and the cost of really reincorporating into the system. It's almost neutral. It's almost cost neutral. So for the convenience of the public and really for in terms of really the visibility of really maintaining those drop-off locations, most likely we're going to be essentially making the recommendation or moving forward with really transitioning from the glass drop-off program to again putting it back on the blue bin. So that's where we at. So we're having some discussions with Republic next week. We want to make sure that we understand in terms of really what the pricing structure is going to look like, and really see if it still makes sense from a financial, from an operation perspective to bring that glass back into the blue bin. If we do that, most likely our plan would be to put it back around essentially the first part of the year. So we don't have that much time really to make the announcements, make the transition, but we're hoping really to be in a position to pull the trigger in the next couple of weeks. One of the things we haven't really decided and we're still looking at that is, if we transition into that, should we keep some of those bins for glass only in essentially the areas where we have an active NRC. So that's something that it still would require a truck to service essentially that container. We would still really divert that glass to Los Reales and really continue to try to keep the door open with Strategic and that business model. And the only intent is really to make sure that we can still collect some glass again for the local use. So that's something that we're still looking at that, looking at quantifying the impacts of that and really the potential benefits of really having that that in place. So that's just kind of the update. So certainly I would say in the next couple of weeks we should have an understanding of where we think we may be going. We will essentially, obviously, if we are moving forward, we'll obviously send you some sort of communication, and the same thing we'll do to Mayor and Council. And if there's really concerns or there's things that we may hear from them that we shouldn't do that, then obviously we're going to take a step back on that. But that's really where I think at this point in time it's our recommendation. But again, we still need to finalize and solidify those numbers before we are able to make the final decision.
Carlos, I have a question, a couple questions for you actually. The first one, so what you're saying is we're sending last to Phoenix and they're supposed to be cutting us checks and they're bouncing, so they're not paying us. And they're not sending us the quality of crushed glass that we were supposed to get. So basically they're breaching our contract. So why would we even want to even consider keeping with them? I'm just trying to make sure I understand that.
No,
that second part of what you were talking about with going to the landfill.
The only thing is really just to keep essentially that not from completely collapsing the program in its entirety. I know we may have some folks that are very interested in really keeping essentially the program in the as-is condition. So this will be a way really to, the volume would be a significant. We still kind of keep the agreement in place. But yeah, it in reality, it's just trying to provide some of the, another alternative, but in reality, I don't think it's going to be amount to much. And that's why I said it's not a solid, I would say, recommendation. So we're still mulling over. But yeah, in reality, it doesn't make too much sense. So it's really just we do away with it its entirety.
Right. I I'm going to go back to, because we're shipping it up there. So we're spending the money to ship it up there. And they're not paying us.
So we're not paying. That's one of the good things. So we're not paying for delivery. So for taking it from Tucson to Phoenix, we're not paying that. And that's
okay. That's why I needed clarification, because the way you were explaining it is, you know, we're sending it up, and so we naturally assume, or I naturally assume, that we're paying for that shipment.
Yeah, that was my impression too.
So if we're not paying for the shipment, then but what are they doing with it that's not right? You know, and the other question was, how much glass from the city? I mean, I know you have the drop-off sites, but how much just ends up in the landfill, because, or in the recycle bins? Do you know, glass is glass. To me, it's like, I feel stupid putting it into the trash, but, you know, because it is recyclable. But I don't have a local place near me that I don't have storage facilities to keep all my glass. So I wasn't using the hauling across town to recycle it. So to me, it sounds like going back to, like you said, going back to just putting it in a recycle is probably going to be the best thing. And maybe avoiding this other thing altogether is better.
That's right. I don't have those figures in terms of really the amount of glass, but certainly on the MRF report, it tells you how much glass are we collecting per ton. So it's averaging about 200 tons per month. Overall, I think, I can't remember those numbers, but overall, when you look at how much glass essentially is being recycled, is being put in the bins, it's a very small percentage as compared to the glass that we generate anyway. So I'll dig up those numbers. I don't have that percentage, but I'll certainly dig it up and forward it to you via separate email. And that gives you an idea what is a total glass generation typically per capita, how much essentially still goes to the landfill, how much is being diverted through our blue bin, and how much was being diverted really through our program. So I'll get you a better numbers on that.
And Carlos, we do have a printout that shows the 23 tonnage deliveries monthly to the MRF, and they're broken down. So we've got plenty of tons of glass to look at monthly.
I think that the one that I'm looking at, I think, is for the whole year. But
yeah,
I have to go back to a more settled point, perhaps, which is, there are actually three collections going on, right? One of them is people putting it in their blue bin, and that blue bin is going to the MRF. So that's the 2,000 tons a year that is shown here in this sheet that we got from 9-6. The second one was the special collection where people took it to the special sites. And that's the one that was going down to the landfill, being picked up by Phoenix and taken up there. we also have to remember that we do have a glass crusher on site in Los Reales. And the third one, of course, is people who simply threw it into the trash and it ended up in the landfill itself. So my understanding was that the amount that was being picked up through the special collections that was sitting in the piles by the crusher at the landfill was getting way ahead of what Phoenix was taking, because they were taking the glass from the MRF in preference to the glass from the Los Reales. Is that correct?
I really couldn't say if that was their preference. And as a matter of fact, I think the preferences are much better hearing from SMI. Their preference is really to get glass from the drop-off programs because their glass is less contaminated than the glass that is collected at the MRF. So that will be the preference. But in terms of the approaches that we're taking, in terms of preferring the glass from the MRF as compared to ours, I was not aware of that. And again, that's that I couldn't vouch for that.
Well, what I had heard was that the MRF, because Republic got back into discussion with the company. So instead of, it had been that the MRF was simply trucking the glass to the Los Reales landfill, but because they got into touch with the company, then Republic was taking their glass now, or having their glass taken back up to Phoenix. I think if we continue on a limited basis with the special collection, we should be able to crush it ourselves. I mean, part of the reason we couldn't do it is that the numbers got so big, because lots of people were cooperating. So if people know they can just put it into their blue barrel, and that will get recycled in some way by the MRF, because the MRF will continue. I think Republic will put pressure on the company to continue to pick up the glass from there. Then the smaller amount of glass can be crushed and used locally, as we'd always envisioned. Use it for cover for the landfill. Use it for doing the sandbags at monsoons. Using it for pipes and so forth, subfill for water and sewer pipes. That's what I hear from you, is that part will continue, but on a much smaller scale, and not with the kind of publicity that we had hoped before to actually put into place, and that's never really happened.
Ms. Fargo, that is correct, and to your point, in terms of that's the value, really still keeping some of those drop off collections, really to be able to say let's have folks that really take the glass, let's crush it ourselves, let's really find that local use. But again, just looking at what the protections would look like and what would be the unit cost of really doing that, those are some of the things that we're evaluating. So yeah, that's exactly why you want to have that third door available. But again, it's really quantifying that and what that would look like. So we certainly don't want to jump from basically a processing cost of a per ton going from MRF. We know we pay roughly about $100 a ton. We certainly don't want to create a unit cost where we're processing the glass in the nature of $150, $200. We didn't want to put that into that mix. So again, that's what some of the things that we need to look at that.
And I would encourage it being at the same places where there is the plastic recycling. So
okay. If
you're kind of consolidating, I just know that at Ward 6, people bring both at the same time. If you who goes there. And
okay.
So that consolidates trips, whereas the NRCs, I think, have had a lot of problems with contamination, with, you know, fires and all kinds of other things. I don't know how many of them are still going. So there are only three plastic recycling facilities. I mean, there's Ward 6, there's the, where's the other one? There's one down in the
Ward 4, Ward 6, 4. And Fire Station 15.
Yeah, okay.
Station and,
And so the glass could be done there at the same time.
Okay.
All right, any more questions for Carlos? All right, let's move on to the next topic, the waste to energy update that everybody's writing about in the centennial.
So I wasn't here for the last meeting where Kevin Burke provided you pretty much a hopefully provided you an overview in terms of how discussions have occurred with some of those waste to energy companies. It first started with, hey, we're renaming the Los Reales landfill to the Los Reales Sustainability Campus. That really triggered a lot of interest really for those type of companies, waste to energy companies, to basically set a lot of unsolicited proposals. The next one was essentially when we were doing our zero waste roadmap, we did what is called request for information process, where we reach out to all the companies and say, what technology may be available out there that we can deploy those realities really to meet our goals. So that really created a lot of attention on that. We essentially closed the loop on that and said, we finalized our zero waste roadmap. Thank you. We got your information. We're going to, once it's time really for us to start looking at that technology, then we'll get back to you. Still, there was a lot of interest in really force really themselves on onto us in terms of really providing more of a aggressive proposal. That's what essentially that's what it came about a couple months ago. And obviously the maybe the potential disconnect between environmental services and the Office of Economic Initiatives in terms of, one, from a waste perspective, we're not really pursuing that at this point in time because we're not there yet. But in terms of how they were viewing that, is really as a possibility of the creation of jobs, investments, and really ensuring that if it made sense really for them to essentially to move that along. Council made a policy decision and said, you know what, you may be applying for grants here and there really to create that type of economic opportunities here within the city. And since then, the council said, no, we're not pursuing that. So where we are today is it's really the Office of Economic Initiatives is really providing more of a formal response really to those companies and say, you gave us an unsolicited proposal. We asked you for some information from you really to clarify your proposal. And here's really our response that that we're not really ready to move that forward. There's still a lot of unknowns, and that we would like to pause and have discussion at a later time. So that's where we at. That's the update, is really just responding more formally from the city's side, the Office of Economic Initiatives, and saying, folks, we still got a lot of questions to do. We still are not quite there. And so therefore we're gonna pause on this effort. And that's really the only update to that initiative.
So are people really seriously considering it, or is it really going to be just is the pause really more than a pause?
Ms. Margaret, it's really more than a pause. It's we got a lot of stuff that we need to develop first before we get into that mode. And the next one is really we really need to get our arms around organics. We really need to get ourselves essentially our arms around recycling. So I think if we do that, we have a much bigger fish to fry in the next 2 to 3 years or 5 years before we get into that. We got to look at what is going to be the agreement look like with it moving forward with recycling. Is that something that we need to issue a new request for proposals? We need to do that fairly soon. We need to know what we're going to do in the long term, whether we continue to operate in the assets condition, or is there enough interest really to build a different facility by somebody else? So that we need to, that's really our short-term focus, is really taking care of recycling, really, and then really taking care of the organics, dealing with the organics, and really putting in place a lot of those phase one initiatives at the landfill. So composting is still going to be something that we need to invest, and that's going to be where I see ourselves being very focused in the next 2 to 3 years. And if we're able to get ahead of the game, yeah, we can look at what may be down the road. But I think those are the things that to develop and put them in place, I'm thinking anywhere between 3 to 5 years. That's going to be the focus for the department. So waste to energy. It's certainly a technology, as has been mentioned before. As a matter of fact, this week I was in Minneapolis and I got an opportunity to tour their waste to energy facility. And it's really, really impressive in terms of their process, how they're sitting in the middle of town right next to the Twins Stadium. And you really don't even notice that the fact that the waste to energy facility is right next to it. So it's a very clean facility looks decent. I wasn't able to perceive any major odors, issues, litter. It really just became to be very unnoticeable. So I think if we have to consider other technologies down the road, I think we should look at them and be able to look at some of those facilities and see if that's something that really makes sense for Tucson. I know we're totally opposed to that. And as a matter of fact, Minneapolis and the county there have made a commitment that they don't want to continue to have those types of facilities. And they made a commitment that they want to walk away from those facilities anywhere between the year of 2028 or 2040. And so what does that mean? That means that essentially they have to build landfills, they have to build transfer stations, they have to revamp essentially collection system, and they have to do that within the next 12 to 13 years. So they got a much bigger problem than to solve, and all the logistics and the cost. And then when you look at their tipping fees, what they charge landfills out there, their tipping fee is around $60 a ton. Tipping fee for a waste to energy facility is around $69. So price wise, they're not that much different. And that's something that we always had the feeling that tipping fees for a waste to energy facility would be much, much greater. Excuse me.
Carlos, yes. What was the company's name that came to talk to us? Do you remember?
I think there was a few companies. I think one of them was a Canadian company. I believe it's called Viking Solutions.
Okay. All right. And then the, do you know? Yeah, sorry. I'll give you time to hydrate.
I'm good. Thank you.
I mean, one of the questions was they also came to discuss with us pyrolysis, which was a slightly different process than just waste to energy. So there's some subtleties that have to be kept. And like, what the one in Minneapolis, was that simply a burning of the materials and using it to heat water to make steam to turn turbines? Or what was the...
essentially, it's a big burner. It's a big, essentially, a kiln, bringing the waste. They burn it. It generates water vapor. Yeah. That water vapor, they essentially use that water vapor really to inject it into the central plant facility. And as the steam essentially is being generated, and it's also, they use that really to generate power. So it really becomes to be, they eliminate the waste. They basically create energy from that, create water vapor, which is then used to by the central plant to really heat up a lot of their buildings.
Okay, so they're using in part the steam to heat buildings, right, in the wintertime.
Yes. Which is
what the Europeans have used it for, where they have the waste to energy inside apartments is primarily in the northern countries where it's used as steam to go through steam tunnels and so forth to create heat, which we don't need here, right? We want to send the heat away. We're glad to send it to Sweden or someplace like that.
Oh, we get cold sometimes.
Yeah, but you know, 3 days we get cold and we need it.
But in retrospect, we need that energy really to cool us during the summer. So it really turns heat into some source of energy that we can certainly use really to power up a central plant, where it really becomes to be a cooling center or a cooling facility for many buildings in the downtown area. So I think we may have reuse.
Carlos, how much water does a device like that take?
So it doesn't take the water, because in their case, their garbage has a lot of moisture.
Oh, okay.
And so it generates a lot of vapor. As a matter of fact, they really would like to have their trash a lot drier than what they have it. But the way to combat that out is again, they establish another system where essentially they're recovering the vapor.
And that's what I thought I heard. And I just wanted to make sure that was so that they're actually sort of creating the water in part, or releasing the water is a better term. Releasing the water from the dampness of the waste.
Oh, the waste. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And so they're able to have a high enough heat then to handle the organics as well as the paper and Do they pull the metal before they put it in, or
they don't? No, they don't. And so one of the things that they said was, if they were to do it again, they certainly would really spend a lot of time and effort on creating an organics program where they can divert a lot of the stuff, because the organics have a lot of moisture. So the organics and also their garbage has a lot of moisture. So if they could, they certainly would like to have a setup and actually have a MRF in front of their process, so that way they can take away the high valuable plastics, and then only the discarded material would go into the kiln. So that's what we heard from them in terms of what their preference would be if they were to build the facility the way they're running it today, is MRF, really to separate the materials, to collect all the good stuff, and really divert as much of the green waste as they can, and really not having it run through their kiln, and that would eliminate a lot of the vapor generation. But if you do that, then you take the opportunity really to generate steam for other purposes, and really to generate some power.
And one of the things when you do that with the metal in it is you end up with a sludge or the melted metals, which then become a problem of disposal, because when you look at smelting in a copper plants and so forth, there's a whole material whose name I'm forgetting, but then is those big black piles that you see when you mm-hmm. drive through globe, etc. So that would also be a product, the aluminum cans and all those things that they burn.
Do you remember the name of the company, Minneapolis?
So essentially is out of, I can't remember the county. So I went to a conference. This conference is the Municipal Waste Management Association. It's actually is embedded within the U.S. Mayors, the U.S. Conference of Mayors. And so it's, they have an annual conference. And so This year was in Minneapolis, because the president of the association, he works in Minneapolis. So that's where we went for this fall conference. I can't believe that the name of the it's run by the county. I think it's Hemco County or Hennico County. I'll find out, and then I'll send you that information. But if you Google Minneapolis and you look at essentially the Twin Stadium. Just directly, I think it's either east or west. It's in one of the sides, you'll see a very small footprint, a factory with a few stacks, and that's really the facility. And what's interesting, though, is really it's underneath a couple of bridges, a couple of freeway ramps, and then on one side, you have the stadium. On the other side, you have a hotel. On the other side, you have a high-rise building. So there's a lot of development is basically occurring around this facility. So, and that may be the pressure that they're getting really to close down their facilities. But I don't think that's really the case. I think it's really the policy has been made by the state. So that's what's a little bit different from where we're at. The state is really taking the lead on telling the cities what they need to do from the waste management perspective, forcing a lot of the zero waste goals, forcing a lot of things upon them that they have to really comply with those requirements, as compared to here in Arizona that they certainly don't want us to do any drastic changes to the way we handle solid waste.
What's the air quality impacts of the plant?
Very minimal. I think very minimal. I think what they described, though, when it's very cold, you can see a vapor plume. But in terms of really any contamination, stuff like that, they have not had any compliance issues on that. So when I was there, it was working. Both of the kilns were working. I really didn't see any fumes, any dust. It really looked like the facility wasn't really running at all.
Yeah. That's very interesting. They must have big scrubbers then to handle all of the materials that are coming out. I mean, you can't help but get organics and NOx and all the other things that come out of combustion. So it's going somewhere. It's not just not
right. Right. Yeah. And obviously they showed us, and essentially it's going into big socks. So essentially you have multiple filters, multiple scrubbers, and the ultimate scrubber is really, its ambition is all the air goes through this set of socks, all the essentially the ash and all the stuff basically settles in there, but the time is essentially is released, you basically don't see anything. But yeah, there's some waste that essentially it's collected and and is processed somewhere else. And that's something that they're running up against with the landfill that they designated for the disposal of the ash is getting to be, is filling up fairly quickly. And so that's another issue that they're having to deal with that as well.
Build up, that would indeed, that is a problem, is the how to deal with the ash. So they're mm-hmm. landfilling the ash.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Thanks. Next. Is your speaking voice okay now?
I hope so, yes.
Oh, I'll good. Try. Okay, you sound good. I was going to give you a break if it wasn't. The bifusion update.
Okay, so as you all are aware, that the council executed back in May an agreement to build a metal building for bifusion operations at Los Reales. One of the critical elements of that was really not only the construction itself of a metal building, but really bringing utilities really to that facility and all the electrical panels are really needed really to sustain operations at Los Reales. Those are really long lead items, take a while really to manufacture. And we're talking about a timeframe anywhere between 9 to 12 months. So that really created a lot of concerns to the Vice Mayor Krasalchik, said, wait, we really can't wait to that long. It's really is a concern. And also the other component of that is really the timeline that it really takes DEP really to schedule their crews really to make the connection to us and really also the city being responsible really to absorb the cost for that connection. And that adds really to the timeline. So the critical path is we need to design a facility, we need to identify what the power needs are. And then from that point on, we need to get the facility approved by our own internal planning development services. We get essentially the permit, we hire a contractor essentially needs to order that equipment, and that equipment is going to take some time really to get ordered and get delivered, and the time frame is anywhere between 9 to 12 months. So when Vice Mayor saw the site at Plummer, said, well, maybe we can expedite essentially the process and really getting bifusion up and running at the best we can, knowing that we don't have to build a building, knowing we don't have to do any site work. But at the end of the day, it really became to be an issue that the both critical points are critical on the critical path is really power connectivity. Even though we had power at the Plummer site, we still needed to upgrade the panels. We still needed really for TEP to come in and do that. And so when you compare the timelines from one to the other, they were relatively comparable in terms of time. After reviewing it, and by city manager really meeting with a lot of the members of the council, they were concerned that the investment, the level of investment that we were making on that side, and not really having anything at the end of the day, that they said, well, we approved essentially this agreement back in May with the premises that all the investments would be made at Los Reales. If this venture were to work, that was great. And if it didn't work, then at least we were able to keep a building, we were able to service that building, and the investment that we made, we could basically just, we would keep it to ourselves rather than walking away from a site that we're just gonna be leasing or renting for the next 5 years. So at the end of the day, there was really no action from the council on that because they had given us direction really to proceed with that agreement. We're moving forward with the agreement as was originally planned. And we're basically just starting from scratch on really, not starting from scratch, but we're picking up where we left off in terms of design fees, designs, location, so that we can set up that building at Los Reales to meet Bifusion's needs and the city needs moving forward. So we came full circle. I think there was reasons why we were considering other sites. At the end of the day, was really concluded that it is really the best interest of the city really to invest in our own facility and really promote what the council adopted as a sustainability campus. We need to stay in line with that. And if we were going to make investments from a solid waste perspective, that Los Reales would be the best location really to continue and make those investments. So that's the update. So right now where we are today is we're reviewing the scope of work, the fee structure, and the design to make sure that we're all have an understanding of what we're doing, putting that in place and getting the ball rolling on that end separately. Vice Mayor and the City Manager's Office are working internally with Planning Development Services, with TEP, to see if we can just get an expedited review and get an approval so we can essentially get power to that facility as quickly as we can and be in a position really to order that switch or that service entry panel as soon as we can. So that way it helps us really deliver the project a lot faster than any typical construction. So there's some risk associated with that, but we're going to take some calculated risk. But I think it's really that's the interest of really the city moving forward in really just building that facility at Los Reales.
Once you have the design with basically the first review, can't you order the panel at that time?
We would, right. Yes. Okay.
I just want to confirm for everyone else, this panel issue is a major one. I'm working on a remodel at our church, and the electric panel is exactly as you say. For us, it's like 6 to 8 months, and the HVAC itself is close to a year. Mm-hmm. So that's the delay in bringing on these major pieces of mechanical of equipment. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. It's very mm-hmm. frustrating, but that's the life that we live in right now.
Carlos, since the city is requiring or wanting us to build, do this building, are they kicking in the money for it?
City always did.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
The new building that you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
that's going to cost, these millions of dollars. The city wants us to do it. So we're ponying up the money. Are they reimbursing us for that?
So we are the city.
We're in environmental services. We're right. Different.
Yeah. So yes, to answer your question, yes, we're being asked really to build that building. And yes, part of our environmental services fund will essentially absorb the cost of that project. Yes.
So it comes out of the enterprise fund.
That's correct.
Even though we didn't budget for it, it's not in our capital improvements. It's the city says do it, so we have to do it, and they're not going to kick in the money. In other words, they come up with great ideas or bad ideas, whatever it is, but they said we have to do it, so we have to do it, and then we have to eat it out of enterprise.
Yes, and I think that's part of the discussions moving forward is really how do we make those investments sustainable, and what is really the rate implications, not only in terms of the capital, but the ongoing O&M costs really to keep those programs up and running.
Well, if you want us to come to a mayor and council meeting, we'll make signs.
Okay.
When is the last, you said you're sending out the request for scope and reviewing the scope of work. Do you already have a firm in mind to do this, or are we way back at the beginning of still trying to find a firm?
We already have a firm identified. We have to use the folks who are on our on-call services. Mm-hmm. So we have selected Lizard Rock design consultants to help us with that. They're very familiar essentially with the landfill. They're the ones that did all the improvements on the original phase one improvements, the scale house and the administration building. They're also helping us out with the phase one improvements, Los Reales, and they're also doing VHHW improvements as well. So they're very familiar with the site. And again, we have to use our on-call contractors or consultants and contractors as well.
So we don't have to go out to bid and go through all that long process.
Right. We don't. Mm-hmm.
That'll cut
a lot of times. We don't gain that much time in it anyway. But yeah, we don't.
Good. All right. So any other
vote for the council still, or is all this pretty well set?
So I don't think we need to go back to the council. I think because the council approved essentially that agreement, we're moving forward with that. And the biggest thing was make an investment remote offsite or make an investment to Los Reales. So we're back on making the investments on city property.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you.
Let's move on to the financial monthly report. And there's Maggie. She's going to help us out.
Good afternoon. Let me just share my screen. I will start with, so I prepared two reports this month. One was the one that was the overview broken down by the different business areas. So let's start with that one. Let me get my sharing going here. Okay, let's see. Okay, can everyone see the screen?
Yes.
Okay, great. Good. All right, let's get started. So this was a format of report that you had been asking for, and thank you for your patience while I got things sorted out in our financial system so I could generate these numbers with reliability and also without tons of manual adjustments. So we've made a lot of sort of cleanup in the financial system so I could get things where we needed to have them. So we could show you side by side each of the business areas. So the first area is the environmental services, and that's the enterprise fund 502. And we have administration. Last year, the unaudited actuals, and keep in mind this number will change. We are still wrapping up the financial statements. All of the numbers for 23 are, it's possible that they will change. We're still wrapping up the financial statements for fiscal year 23, and a lot of sort of year-end adjustments are happening related to like things like insurance for retirees, the pension adjustments. We just got the numbers from the actuaries, and so those entries are getting posted. So you will notice these changing month to month, but not drastically. So we spent $9.6 million in administration last year. Our budget for this year is $18.2 million, and so far $887,000 has been spent. The projections right now are right at budget. I have not done the official projections for the first quarter yet. They are due to be turned in to the city manager by the end of this month, and those become our official projections. And so I don't want to come up with sort of my interpretation of the projections right now until I go through the whole forecasting process, and I'll share those forecasts with you next month. Next, we have Tucson Clean and Beautiful, all very what we spent last year is what we'll spend this year. That's an agreement that gets generated between Tucson Clean and Beautiful and the city. So far, just the $25, that's just, they have a small office space and there's some postage that posts there before we make the annual payment to them. And that's a one-time payment. So we'll see that post at some point. Customer support and billing. So far, we have $123,000 that we've spent this year. Recycling and waste rejection, $284,000 so far spent this year. Regulation compliance and data management, we spent $429,000 last year, $127,000 so far this year. Los Reales, $9.9 million last year, and we're at $1.5 million in expenditures so far. Plastic waste diversion and reuse. This is the location, the place where we will start posting the costs related to the Bifusion project and any other costs related to plastic waste diversion. The $85,000 was the first payment to Bifusion. That was part of the agreement by Mayor and Council with Bifusion. So that's what that $85,000 is. And there's one other payment due of $80,000 this year based on the deliverables and timing. And so that's why I just in that case, I did put a forecast of 165 because that's likely to be the ceiling on what we'll pay to Bifusion and for this year. And then we may, of course, have other costs related to the building as time goes by, as Carlos mentioned. But those costs for the building itself, we'll see those posting down here in the capital improvement projects. So if there was a point in time later on in the year and you wanted to see the costs by the different projects down at the bottom line there, I can definitely provide you with that detail as time goes on. Operations and maintenance, $169,000. Silver Bell pump and treatment system, we've spent just over $10,000 so far this year. Residential collection, last year, $17.7 million, and we're at $2.9 million so far for the first 3 months. Brush and bulky, just north of $1 million so far. Commercial collection, $5.8 million last year, and so far, $1.5 million spent. Container maintenance, $170,000. Household hazardous waste, $224,000. Satellite shared services, that's where my team and also the procurement team, some of our costs post here to this fund. We're the business services department staff that are embedded here at EGSD. Then the capital improvements projects. And again, that's we're just getting started for the year, so not much posting there. And of course, those invoices come in, they don't come in really regularly. And then there's sort of big ones that we'll post. We're just gonna be paying our last bill for cell 4B is, we should have that posting soon. So you'll see that jump up next month. Something new this year, just I wanted to point out to you where it says Fund 503, the Brownfields. Just a sort of housekeeping around the accounting, we ended up moving, we have two Environmental Protection Agency grants. One is a revolving loan fund, and the other is a brownfields and household and hazard testing and identification grant. And those two grants, we ended up moving to this Fund 503. It rolls up to Fund 502 at, in the financial statements, but the costs stay separate there. And that's really just so we can utilize. Workday has a pretty cool grant module functionality to help us manage the grants. And so we moved all both grants there. So that's what that is there. And then you did ask to see code enforcement and graffiti abatement broken out. And those are general funded activities. And those are the, so far, $523,000 for code enforcement and $115,000 for the graffiti abatement. Any questions with this report? And I'm happy to, any feedback you have, I know it looks a little different than the one you had seen with the previous finance manager. So I was keeping it sort of formatting similar to the report I had generated for the roll-ups. And if there's a way that this can be broken out that or presented differently, that would be more useful to you. Please let me know. Let me pull up the second report. Okay, so this is our overview of Fund 502 only, so of our enterprise fund. So this doesn't include the code enforcement, graffiti abatement, or the grant activities. And really, I won't go over the expenditures unless you have any specific questions. Those are all of the different areas in the detail that we looked at. This is just a roll up of that at the bottom. But for the revenues, if we look at the collections so far, $8.8 million for residential and $2 million for commercial. And bear in mind, there can be a bit of a lag, right? You get your bill on for September and you don't pay it till October. So in all of these cases, we're very on track for what we had budgeted in each of the types of revenue amounts. The landfill service charge, we have $2.2 million collected so far this year. The groundwater remediation fee, $949,000. Self-haul, $809,000. And then we have some smaller amounts for the penalties, household hazardous waste, and a few miscellaneous things. Then we have the sale of recyclables and recycling surcharge. And one item we will see, the recovered expense and rebates. We do see an amount there for the compressed natural gas that we get a rebate from the IRS that gets submitted to the IRS quarterly. So we should see some, we just got the files for that from the fuel office, and we'll be filing those with the IRS. So we'll see amounts posting there in the next month or so. For the revenues, but all in all, you know, we are a quarter of the way through the year. We had $67 million in budgeted, and we've already collected almost $15.5 million for the first quarter of the year. So we're on track to meet our budget, I think, in that respect. Any questions with this report?
I did have actually, I'm sorry, it was a little bit before, but we can just use the rolled up what you have here. It's sort of a general question. Since we're a quarter of the year through, I'm surprised that a lot of the things are not tracking. So if you multiply the number that you've actually spent times four, you don't get, you don't come up to the revised budget. And in many cases, the revised budget is actually smaller than last year's actuals. Is it things do not move along smoothly, that there are ups and downs in the expenditures, or?
Well, in a lot of cases, our biggest revenue buckets are bills out to customers. And so our September bill, we receive in early August, October, and then we pay it in October. So it takes time for those revenues to post. So I pulled this report on October 2nd. And at that point, our financial system for September had not closed completely. Expenditures for the month continue to post until the first 5 days of the subsequent month. Mm-hmm. So I think that represents the lag, Ms. Garcia, really is just the that it takes time to get all of September in. And then I pull this early so it's available in time to be reviewed and then sent out to the committee the day, the week before our meeting. So it's pretty early in the month and we still are collecting our September items.
Okay, well, I appreciate that.
Sure.
It seems really curious to see things down from last year, but even in the overall budget, in some cases it's up, but in some cases it's less. So
I think let's keep looking at it. And yeah. If there are areas that we are concerned, we can look and see, but I don't think that we would be down from last year, because if I take the 15.4 and I multiply it by four, I get $62 million. Mm-hmm. And that's bearing in mind that this isn't capturing all of September through September's revenues. And last year, our actuals were $59 million.
Yeah.
So
that part seems to be very much close, very close on the.
Yeah.
I was looking more at the expenditure side, but I'll keep a track.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Maggie? Now, we are still trying to put together a subcommittee meeting for finance. So hopefully we can figure something out.
And I'll be happy to attend that.
Oh, thank you. We need
I'm
you.
I'm on standby.
Good. All right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for the report.
Sure. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Well, item five is real easy because we didn't have any subcommittees meet. I believe Environmental Services has been going to lots of conferences, right, Carlos? Yeah, because there's one in Boston and
yes, we've been traveling quite a bit. Yes.
Yes.
And it's almost at the same time. Yes.
Yeah.
So I think the next one's coming up. There's a joint recycling and SWANA, Arizona Recycling Coalition, and SWANA Simpsonian or training by the end of the month too. And I think there's quite a bit of folks who will be attending that as well. Nice. I think that should be it for a while, or hope.
It looks like it's fun. It is. Looking at all the new equipment.
Looking at the equipment, really interacting with other folks as well, I think is very good. And really just kind of seeing what other cities are doing, and that we basically share the same issues, very similar. And that basically on one end, and the other end is that we're not too far off. I think some areas were behind and some areas were ahead of the game. So it just gives us a good checks and balances in terms of where we are overall.
Excellent.
Yes, nice. I kind of follow some of those. And so I look at pictures of all the new MRF equipment. And they never put the prices. So I...
You know what I was interested at as part of the training that I attended this week was they're looking at almost like a 35% increase in construction cost of what a MRF used to cost basically a few years ago as compared to where it is today. And most of that is really the processing equipment. And with Doug's help, we can certainly get a much better view or perspective of that equipment and get his insight of how really we need to look at that equipment in the future.
The dream equipment. Yes. Good. Thank you. Let's see. Let's move on to item six for future agenda items. The curb to alley conversations. I remember last meeting we had a gentleman named Richard who was having a lot of problems. So I'm not sure, are we going to deal with that in waste diversions, collections, and education, or are we going to have him show up at ESAC and talk about it then? Do we know?
To be honest with you, I don't know. Was that a citizen that was complaining?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Pat led that.
Okay. So probably my suggestion would be best maybe to cover under the waste diversion collections subcommittee. I think maybe we can cover the vans and full ESAC. And I think maybe working with Maggie, we can probably just get you a good idea in terms of where we are overall, all of the homelessness response and the cost and in a very general format. Mm-hmm. And so I think we can work together on getting that done for the next meeting.
Okay. Sounds good. Anybody else have an item that they would like to learn about?
Well, I was hearing a program about what a big issue fabric and textiles is in both recycling and collections and the whole area. And so I was just wondering, we've never really talked about it in here. One time we did have, when we did our zero waste kind of, a long time ago, we tried doing a zero waste day in which various things, or week, which various things were focused on. One time it was garden hoses and jeans and a couple of other things. And each time there'd been something different. That's about the only time we've really talked about fabric and textiles. And this program, I think it was on an NPR program, was, you know, that most of it comes from manufacturing of clothing. So I don't think we have much clothing manufacturing going on here. But I'd still be interested for us to talk about, you know, what could we do? Is there anything here, any opportunities from some of the small shops that do make things around here that we could look into? So that may be better on waste diversion, but since they didn't meet last time, I would just like to throw in textile recycling.
And even from a residential perspective, that's basically also a big number. We generate a lot of textile waste in our waste stream. So that may be something that we can consider really developing a program for that as a waste diversion program.
Yeah. And I just look like at Savers, they have semi-truck sitting there. There are up to about six of them parked there. And I suspect most of that is clothing that they don't know what to do with. And so it's sitting there. I don't see those trucks moving, or it's not really the truck, it's the trailer. Those trailers moving at all. You know, what's happening with people like them? I mean, are they're storing it? And when I've been abroad in places like Indonesia, I've seen giant piles of American clothes where they just bundle it into a humongous bale and just ship the thing over there, empty it out in the market, and then people paw through it. And so you have everything from cocktail gowns to torn t-shirts. And so,
well, Trevor, don't you get those sort of things at the end of the school year?
Clothing is one of the most difficult things to deal with. Some of the more popular things will go quick. A few years ago, when we were still doing the Wildcat Rummage Sale, there were some very dedicated community members who knew exactly what they were there for. They were going to get stuff on cheap, sell it on eBay and make a profit, but we were always left over with so much clothing and a lot of hangers, so many hangers.
I just throw out another topic for discussion.
Hanger recycling.
What's happened to all the people in the, it used to be you could take them back to the dry cleaners, but I guess nobody's using dry cleaning anymore.
That was really the olden days. They were metal too.
Oh, I still use a dry cleaner and I still take my hangers back to them.
Okay, good. Okay, well, we're to item 7, call to audience, and we don't have anyone this time. So we'll get to leave early, adjournment at 5:08. So everybody enjoy the cooler evenings.
Yes.
Nice to see you all.
Really nice. Yeah, good to see you all.
Thank you. Good night. Take care. Bye-bye. Appreciate your time.
I know. Bye-bye. Thank you.